This one is part five, so we are halfway through. I don't think there's any new people here, so I'm not going to take time for you. We're running late right now, so we're just going to go straight into our mic is working here. Okay, they've got sound. So what I was saying was, there was another instrument of warfare that was also first used in a war with Turkey, and this was the airplane in 1911. A war between fleet plane was used for reconnaissance. Never been used in war before. Of course, the airplane wasn't invented until 1903. So just a point of interest. Part five, is the papacy or France? Not infrequently, the minds of the people, and even of God's servants, are so blinded by human opinions, the traditions and false teaching of men, that they are able only partially to grasp the great things which he has revealed in his word. Okay, we're waiting on the screen load here. Our internet connection seems to have slowed down. So the screen is not loading. It was needful that men should be awakened to their danger, that they should be roused to prepare for the solemn events connected with the close of probation. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which standeth for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation, even to that same time. And at that time thy people shall be delivered, everyone that shall be found written in the book. And that's Daniel 12:1. This is where we're going. But we need to go through the background to get there. This verse is the only one in the Bible that pinpoints the time of trouble and the close of probation. There is no other verse in the Bible that specifically mentions this time by name as the time of trouble such as never was. So this is a very important verse. It tells us that after very specific political events occur, there will follow a time of national trouble so horrendous that the world has never seen anything like it before. Our goal is to identify the political events that precede this time in order to understand better where we are in relation to the close of probation. In order to identify this time period, we must go back to chapter 11. And identify the events foretold in the preceding verses. In our last presentation, we discussed how Daniel 11 is different than other prophecies in that it is presented in plain language instead of in symbols. The angel says, "And now I will show thee the truth." And I'd like to comment here that a little ways down, when we get down to discussing verses 44 and 45, there's some word meanings that I'm going to be bringing in that actually aren't on the slides. And since we've done this, I have actually gone in to some of the word meanings and some of the history covered in verses 29, 30, and 31. And when I look up the meaning of the words in this passage and compare it with the historical events that took place in fulfillment of the passage, I have come to the conclusion that there is no way Daniel wrote this. There is no way any human being could have written this. This was the words of the angel that he simply wrote down. No human could possibly have chosen these words that mean what they do and perfectly describe so many events. And the entire chapter 11 is this way. And I did not realize that before. I had only looked at 44 and 45 and the word meanings there. But the whole chapter, each word and its meaning in Hebrew describes a whole historical event. It is incredible what God put in this chapter. Daniel did not make this up. Somebody gave this to him. Some divine being gave this to him. And we know, of course, that it was the angel Gabriel who spoke to him. And at the time of the end shall the king of the south push at him, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. That's verse 40. So far, we have positively identified the time of the end as 1798. The king of the south as Egypt, and him, or the willful king, as France. Now we are going to look closely at verses 36 to 39 to see if France really does match every specification of the willful king. As William Miller once said, if one word lacks a fulfillment, then you must look for another event or wait its future development. So let's see if France really does fulfill this prophecy of the willful king. Daniel 11:36, and the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished, for that is determined shall be done. The king that does according to his will would be a new conquering power. We know this from the other times in the prophecy that this phrase, do according to his will, is used. It has been used twice before in this prophecy. The first time it is referring to Alexander the Great. And a mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. Daniel 11:3. And the second time it is referring to Rome and Julius Caesar, who was the leader of Rome at the time. But he that cometh against him shall do according to his own will, and none shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land, which by his hand shall be consumed. And that's Daniel 11:16. Also notice from verse 35 that this power would appear near the time of the end, and some of them of understanding shall fall, to try them and to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. Now I have a question. Was the papacy a new conquering power at the end of the 1260 years? No, but France was. While the kingdom of France had existed for centuries, Republican France was something new, never seen before, and the Directory determined to spread their form of revolution and republicanism by the force of arms and conquest. They appointed Napoleon Bonaparte to lead the conquest of the rest of Europe. And this was the difference between the Republic of the United States and the Republic of France. Well, there were other differences too, but one big difference was the United States didn't try to take its experiment of republican government to the rest of the world by force of arms. But France did, with very bad results. And today the United States is trying to take its form of democracy to the world by force of arms, which does not make sense. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself. We just read this a few minutes ago. For sake of time, I'm going to move on. Did the papacy exalt itself above God? Yes, it undoubtedly did. But what of France? Remember, France was the nation that most supported and upheld the papacy throughout the Dark Ages. By compelling men to worship at the dictates of the church, France exalted itself above God and put itself in the place of God, for only God can dictate who and what man should worship. Quotes, but blackest in the black catalog of crimes, most horrible among the fiendish deeds of all the dreadful centuries, was the St. Bartholomew Massacre. The world still recalls with shuddering horror the scenes of that most cowardly and cruel onslaught. The King of France, urged on by Romish priests and prelates, lent his sanction to the dreadful work. Yes, the French king was just as guilty of fulfilling this verse as the papacy was. The king exalted himself above God and usurped the power that only God can have. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor the regard of any god, for he shall magnify himself above all. Here we find a very interesting coupling of ideas. First, this king disregards the God of his fathers. France in 1793 did exactly this. It abolished the worship of God, the God his fathers had claimed to worship through the papacy. Second, he disregards the desire of women and disregards all gods. Is this fulfilled in the doctrine of priestly celibacy, as most teach, the desire of women, disregarding it? Perhaps. But does the church really disregard the desire of women? While they claimed celibacy, the monasteries and convents were often connected by underground tunnels. During the Reformation and after, mass infant burial grounds were discovered under the convents. And I have personally heard testimony that even today, many nuns have babies who are never permitted to live. These babies are fathered by monks and priests. Does this state of affairs really sound like the disregard of the desire of women? It's a situation of say one thing and do another. But what of France? According to Smith, this was fulfilled when France reduced the marriage contract to a mere civil union. But this seems to fit even worse than the priestly celibacy idea. But let's look at this from another angle. Paul says, "And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust one toward another, men with men working that which is unseemly." Who disregards the desire of women more truly than the gays? If gay rights was a part of France at this time, what could more perfectly fit this description? Some will say that there are gay priests among the Catholic clergy, and this fulfills it. Yes, this is true. But homosexuality has never been a tenet of the church. In fact, the church burned men at the stake who were caught in homosexual acts. Was gay rights a part of the French Revolution? Isn't it a modern thing? Let's take a look at what the gay rights defenders themselves have to say. Quotes, "Before the French Revolution, sodomy had been a capital crime under royal legislation. The National Constituent Assembly abolished the law against sodomy when it revised French criminal law in 1791 and got rid of a variety of offenses inspired by religion. The revolutionary and Napoleonic period was a time of relative freedom and opened the modern era of legal toleration for homosexuality in Europe. Napoleonic conquests imposed the principles of Napoleon's penal code, including the decriminalization of homosexuality, on many other parts of Europe, including Belgium, the Dutch Netherlands, the Rhineland, and Italy. Other states freely followed the French example, for example, Bavaria in 1813 or Spain in 1822. And that's a direct quote from Wikipedia. The gay rights activists hail the French Revolution as the beginning of their emancipation and freedom. It is perhaps not surprising, then, that this liberal democratic revolution also initiated the disestablishment of sexual orthodoxy, permitting greater individual freedom and extracting the state from the regulation of homosexuality. With the advent of the Napoleonic legal code, sodomy disappeared from criminal law. And as Napoleon swept through Europe, evicting the mainstays of the old order, he left new nation builders in his wake, who founded legal systems without the category of sodomy. The modern world of most of Western and Southern Europe, as well as its territories, principally in Latin America, broke the medieval link between homosexuality and criminality in the early 19th century. And this is a law website that I found this quote on. So France legalized sodomy, and then what? Nor regard any god. Here we see atheism and sodomy coupled together. Revelation puts these two together in exactly the same way in speaking of the French Revolution. Quotes, "And their dead bodies shall lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom in Egypt, where also our Lord was crucified." And here I would like to mention something. I have listened to a number of presentations of the King of the North as the papacy. And one of them said that the reason why we switch from literal interpretation in verse 40 to spiritual interpretation there is because in Revelation 11, Egypt is atheism. I kind of missed the link, but that was what they said. Anyway, did you notice that in Daniel 11:40, it did not say spiritual Egypt shall push at him? It said the king of the south shall push at him. And in Revelation 11, where Egypt represents atheism, it says specifically that this is spiritually called Sodom and Egypt. The prophecy itself is telling you that it is supposed to be a spiritual application. Daniel 11 doesn't say that. So how can you use Revelation 11 to prove that Daniel 11 is talking about spiritual Egypt? It doesn't work. The great city in whose street the witnesses are slain and where their dead bodies lie is spiritually Egypt. Of all nations presented in Bible history, Egypt most boldly denied the existence of the living God and resisted his commands. No monarch ever ventured upon more open and high-handed rebellion against the authority of heaven than did the king of Egypt. When the message was brought him by Moses in the name of the Lord, Pharaoh proudly answered, "Who is Jehovah that I should hearken unto his voice to let Israel go? I know not Jehovah, and moreover, I will not let Israel go." This is atheism, and the nation represented by Egypt would give voice to a similar denial of the claims of the living God and would manifest a like spirit of unbelief and defiance. The great city is also compared spiritually to Sodom. The corruption of Sodom in breaking the law of God was especially manifested in licentiousness. And I would also mention in homosexuality as well. And this sin was also to be a preeminent characteristic of the nation that should fulfill the specifications of this scripture. According to the words of the prophet then, a little before the year 1798, some power of satanic origin and character would rise to make war upon the Bible. And in the land where the testimony of God's two witnesses should thus be silenced, there would be manifest the atheism of Pharaoh and the licentiousness of Sodom. This prophecy has received a most exact and striking fulfillment in the history of France. During the Revolution in 1793, the world for the first time heard an assembly of men born and educated in civilization and assuming the right to govern one of the finest of the European nations uplift their united voice to deny the most solemn truth which man's soul receives and renounce unanimously the belief and worship of a deity. France is the only nation in the world concerning which the authentic record survives that as a nation, she lifted her hand in open rebellion against the author of the universe. Plenty of blasphemers, plenty of infidels there have been and still continue to be in England, Germany, Spain, and elsewhere. But France stands apart in the world's history as the single state which, by the decree of her legislative assembly, pronounced that there was no God, and of which the entire population of the capital and a vast majority elsewhere, women as well as men, danced and sang with joy in accepting the announcement. What a history. Even today, homosexuality is called sodomy, the exact description that Revelation gives to this period, and a perfect fulfillment of Daniel, that the willful king would disregard the desire of women. So we see in both Daniel 11 and Revelation 11 a coupling of atheism and homosexuality. This cannot be speaking of the papacy, for they have always claimed to worship God and have claimed purity and chastity. They even put homosexuals to death, outwardly considering sodomy a base crime, while often practicing it in secret. But France, the defender of the church, abolished God entirely and legalized sodomy, just as this verse says the willful king would do. But the great controversy also mentions the French Revolution as the natural result of the repression of the scriptures by the papacy in France. If it was popery that began the work which atheism was completing, the policy of Rome had wrought out those conditions, social, political, and religious, that were hurrying France on to ruin. Writers, in referring to the horrors of the Revolution, say that these excesses are to be charged upon the throne and the church. In strict justice, they are to be charged upon the church. Popery had poisoned the minds of kings against the Reformation as an enemy to the crown, an element of discord that would be fatal to the peace and harmony of the nation. It was the genius of Rome that by this means inspired the direst cruelty and the most galling oppression which proceeded from the throne. Notice the way Sister White makes this seamless transition from popery to atheism of the Revolution. Do you see that? She started out with the Pope having the power and taking control of the nation and that bigotry just turning into this natural result of this revolution that threw out all God and everything. We see this exact same transition in the willful king between verses 36 and 37. And the king shall do according to his will, and he shall exalt himself and magnify himself above every god, and shall speak marvelous things against the God of gods, and shall prosper till the indignation be accomplished. For that is determined shall be done. Neither shall he regard the God of his fathers, nor the desire of women, nor regard any God, for he shall magnify himself above all. So you see how we shifted through there. Very interesting transition. This willful king starts out by exalting himself above God. France forced men to follow the papacy, placing the king and pope above God. The king, or the nation, then abandons the God of his fathers, renouncing the Catholic religion that it had before supported, and disregards the desire of women, legalizes homosexuality, and then disregards all gods, declares atheism to be the national religion. Nowhere in the history of the papacy do we find this smooth transition, or this transition at all. But it is clearly there in the history of France. Even though verse 36 can be made to fit the papacy, this does not in any way change the fact that it perfectly fits France while it supported the papacy. But verse 37 does not fit the papacy. And now to verse 38. But in his estate shall he honor the God of forces. Oh, now we have another God. You see, he keeps changing gods here. One God, then another God, then disregards that God, then has no God, and now we have another God. The God of forces. And a God whom his fathers knew not. Oh, now we have another God that his fathers didn't know. The second God that his fathers didn't know. He keeps changing gods. He can't figure out who his God should be. Shall he honor with gold and silver and with precious stones and pleasant things? France honored their armed forces and tried to spread the revolution throughout the world by the force of arms. They put Napoleon Bonaparte at the head of their army. Someone talking in Napoleon's presence said, "We'll win because God is on our side." Napoleon's retort was, "God is on the side of the big battalions." The God of forces? This quote from Napoleon has become famous and also illustrates the French honor to the God of forces. On the other hand, while the papacy has always resorted to force, it has never had a standing army of its own, but has always used the arms of the state to support it. The next phrase is, a God whom his fathers knew not. This does not fit either the saints of the Catholic Church nor their images that they worship, because when you study into their history, you find that the saints are really the Greek and Roman gods renamed, and the images are the actual images of these same gods with new names. These are not gods that their fathers knew not, but in the French Revolution, they definitely honored a god that had never before been heard of. It was the goddess of reason. This was a god that even the pagans did not know. If you would like to see a statue of this god, just look at the New York Harbor, and you will see the Statue of Liberty. This statue was given to the United States by France. It is called Liberty, but it is really a representation of the goddess of reason, and millions visit her to this day. Thus shall he do in the most strongholds with a strange god, whom he shall acknowledge and increase with glory, and he shall cause them to rule over many, and shall divide the land for gain. While some say that this is fulfilled by the Pope's division of the New World between Spain and Portugal, it perfectly fits what the Directory did with the lands confiscated from the nobles. This land included most of the land of France. The right thing would have been to divide it equally among the common people, that is, if they were going to stay true to their principles of the revolution. But this was not done. Instead, it was broken up into small pieces and sold to the highest bidders, thus enriching the Directory. Divide the land for gain? Something interesting to note. There are those who say that the papacy divided the New World between Spain and France, which is not Spain and France, Spain and Portugal, which is exactly true. They did. But considering the fact that both Spain and Portugal were Roman Catholic and would enrich the Pope with the gains they got from those lands, dividing the land between them didn't give the Pope any extra gain at all. It just settled a dispute. So that doesn't really fit what it says, because he was to divide the land for gain. So here we have a chart of 8 points that we've gone over about the willful king. And then we have France and the papacy. Does it fit? Number one, a conquering power at the end of the 1260 years. France was, the papacy was not. It comes to on the scene at the end of the 1260 years. Revolutionary France did. The papacy definitely didn't. It had been there for 1260 years. It exalts himself. Yes, France did that, and so did the papacy. Speaks great things against God. Yes, France did, and the papacy did too. Atheistic and sodomizing. France, yes. The papacy definitely no. Six, it introduces a strange god his fathers did not know. France, yes. Papacy, well, maybe. Some try to prove that they did. Eight, divides the land for gain. France, yes. Papacy, I definitely say no. Some say they did. As you can see from the chart, while the papacy possibly fits four of the eight specifications, the French nation in the 1790s fits all eight perfectly. And what did we say about every word must have its fulfillment? If it does, then you have it. If the papacy is the willful king, then verse 40 has not happened yet. And parts of verses 36 to 39 are also yet to be fulfilled. This leaves a gap of more than 200 years between the end of verse 39 and verse 40. This gap is continuing to widen as time passes and we don't see the fulfillment of verse 40. Does it make sense to insert this gap of years between these verses when this period has been the most momentous in history? During the last 200 years, we have seen the worst, most destructive wars in the history of the world, as well as unprecedented calamities, both natural and man-made. When you consider that wars of far less consequence and far less destruction are mentioned in Daniel 11, it doesn't make any sense to insert a gap here that leaves out World Wars 1 and 2. But none of these problems exist if France is the willful king. Every word is fulfilled, and as William Miller said, if you find every word of the prophecy is literally fulfilled, then you may know that your history is the true event. We have positively identified 1798 as the time of the end, the king of the south as Egypt, and him, the willful king, is definitely France. Now all we have to do is see if there are historical events that fit the description of verse 40, and that can help us identify the remaining player in this prophecy. And at the time of the end, 1798, shall the king of the south, Egypt, push at him, France, and the king of the north shall come against him like a whirlwind, with chariots and with horsemen and with many ships. And he shall enter into the countries and shall overflow and pass over. In the very year specified, 1798, Egypt gave France a reason to send Napoleon to invade it. Egypt offered only slight resistance, and Napoleon, representing revolutionary France, conquered the country and shot off the nose of the Sphinx. Did you ever wonder why the Sphinx nose was gone? Do you know it was there until Napoleon went to Egypt? One of his generals was target practicing, and the Sphinx lost its nose. But who is the king of the north? This power who comes like a whirlwind. According to history, there is only one power that came against France at this time. And amazingly, it is the power that controlled the geographic region the king of the north always controlled in the earlier portions of the prophecy. This power was the Ottoman Empire. It ruled all the land once ruled by the Seleucid emperors of Greek times. Was there any kind of battle between the papacy and Egypt at the time of the end? No, there wasn't. The papacy lost all its power in this year, and this wound wasn't healed until 1929. The conflict between the papacy and the king of the south cannot even be invented until 1917, and then it isn't a conflict with Egypt, but with Russia, who is not south but north of the papacy. Even then, the atheistic communists did not go after the papacy, but after the Orthodox Church, which the papacy wanted to get rid of anyway. And there's an interesting side note to this. The Ottoman Empire was looking to modernize its army. And this was, I forget the year, it was like 1795, somewhere in there. And since they were friends with France, they asked France to send someone who could come to the Ottoman Empire and modernize their army. And the Directory of France said, we've got just the person for you. We'll send you Napoleon. And they scheduled Napoleon to go to the Ottoman Empire to become the head of their army and train their troops. But 4 days before he was to sail for the Ottoman Empire, there was an uprising in Paris, and Napoleon put it down. And the Directory decided he was too valuable to send away, and they kept him in France. Had that not happened, this prophecy would not have been fulfilled. 4 days. Only 4 days made the difference. And because of those 4 days, this prophecy was filled exactly as it was given. But does the Ottoman Empire fulfill every detail of the remainder of the prophecy? We will consider this in the next presentation. So this is not really the end. And we're going to take a 5-minute break and come back for part 6. I apologize, we turned the mic off before we had closing prayer, so let's bow our heads and kneel as far as possible. Dear Father in heaven, we thank you again for being with us as we go through this important prophecy. We pray that you will continue to be with us, open our minds, impress people with the truths here, help them to study on their own and find out what really is the truth in this prophecy. And we thank you for hearing and answering our prayers.